on iHeartRadio.
Rock.
I want to rock.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, for the next hour. Lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well, as always, as you can tell. Of course, this being Wednesday, we've been moving back and forth between our series, which is dedicated to the alternative top 40 and the top 500 of the top 40. Been playing a lot more top 500, or I should say, top 40 albums, I should say, than non-top 40 albums in this stretch. But this is most definitely going to be of the non-top 40 side of things. This is one of the albums, I mean, quite honestly, I've been really looking forward to doing this show, and I'm dreading it at the same time, because you're going to hear something that you probably never heard before in your life. And it's the type of thing that will probably make 95% of my listeners run away screaming. And I'm going to try to beg you not to do that and hang in with us and try to sit through this and maybe see if you can, like, you know, eke something from it. But I will tell you right off the bat that it takes time. This is an album that I probably played myself, and I consider myself to be very open-minded, but I probably played this album a half dozen times and just went, the world is crazy. The people, the critics who love this are nuts. And then slowly it began to sink in, and I began to change my mind. Let me tell you what we're talking about. In the time frame is 1971. Now, if you think back to 1971, you know, there wasn't a tremendous amount of unbelievably crazy, weird music yet. And out of Germany comes this new type of thing that's happening that eventually gets called krautrock, mostly because it's the German bands that are doing it. And the band that was the first to do it in the weirdest and most interesting way was a band called Can, just three letters, C-A-N. And it's... they just did so many things that were totally nuts that it was hard to wrap my head around it. Now, they put out one album with an American singer named Malcolm Mooney, and he only lasted for the first album. It was rather funny. He had been actually told that his time with Can was so chaotic and crazy in terms of what was happening to him mentally that he decided in 1969 that he had to return to America on the advice of his psychiatrist, who told him that getting away from the music of Can would be a lot better for his mental health. So,
wow.
So Malcolm Mooney quits the band. And at that point, the band members are sitting around in Germany. They're at a cafe. They're sitting in an outdoor cafe, two of the members, just talking, probably having coffee, and a busker goes by and starts doing some strange performance stuff right as they're sitting there. It's a Japanese guy. Name is Damo Suzuki. And they're watching him, and they become intrigued and a little just... maybe we should ask this guy to come down to the studio. So they ask him. He says, sure, why not? They had a performance that night. They put this guy on stage with them. And they just, it stuck. Now, what's so weird is Damo Suzuki has got to be the most enigmatic, I don't want to say singer, because I don't know if he sings. He's a front man.
Vocalizer.
Yeah, he's one of the most enigmatic vocalizers then of all time. Half of the time you won't know what language he's speaking in. He would say that it's sometimes English. You'll hear it. There's a lot of Japanese. He himself said something about how, you know, he sings like in the language of early cavemen. So it's hard to put it all together and figure out what's going on. But the band themselves, their own roots are rather interesting. The band Can started when their keyboardist named Erman Schmidt took a trip to New York City. This is before the band was together, actually, in 1966. Now, he had been studying avant-garde, studying under Karlheinz Stockhausen, as was another friend of his named Holger Zschokai. So Erman Schmidt ends up in New York City and spending as much time as he can with people like Steve Reich and Terry Riley. If you listen to our series on The Who, we were talking about these people, like the song In C and things that influenced Pete Townsend when he was writing some of his own compositions. Anyway, when Schmidt was in New York, he gets exposed to people like Andy Warhol and what was going down at the Hotel Chelsea. And he's, in his own words, he says that New York corrupted him. He says suddenly he realized that there was a huge amount of possibility in the world of rock music. And he decided that maybe if he got together with Holger Zschokai in Germany, they could maybe start to broaden the horizon of what rock music is by combining it with the things that they had been studying, modern classical music. Here's his exact quote. "When I founded the group, I was a classical composer and conductor and pianist, making piano recitals, playing a lot of contemporary music, but also Brahms, Chopin, and Beethoven, and everything. And when we got together, I wanted to do something in which all contemporary music becomes one thing. Contemporary music in Europe, especially, the new music was classical music, was Boulez and Stockhausen and all that. I studied all that. I studied Stockhausen, but nobody talked about rock music like Sly Stone, James Brown, or the Velvet Underground as being contemporary music. Then there was jazz, and all these elements were our contemporary music. It was new. It was, in a way, much newer than the new classical music, which claimed to be the new music." So you see, they're coming from a totally different place than pop music. You could really hardly be further removed from the pop world. And since this show mostly revolves around what is popular, this stands out all the more. Holger Zschokai was a teacher, and he had a 19-year-old pupil, played guitar, so they brought him into the band. His name was Michael Caroli. And then they found this amazing drummer named Jacky Liebezeit. And I, as a drummer, I just can't tell you how much I think of this guy. He's the reason this album is great, this album that we're about to play. He mostly worked in free jazz, but then when he was glad to be involved in something that was going to be a bit more experimental and original. So after they recruited this original guy, Mooney, and Mooney drops out because of his mental health, they find this guy, Demel Suzuki, busking outside of a Munich cafe, and they brought him in, and then they start using him to record. Now, he wasn't one to prepare lyrics. He would walk in, and more or less just things would come out of his mouth that were totally spontaneous. This worked brilliantly for the band. It's what the band was more or less hoping for. So this album, it's called Tago Mago, and it's a double album. And you're not going to believe this, but especially when you hear it. But the first half, I would say, is the popular half. It's the it's the sides.
The easy listening half.
Yeah, we only got to play four songs in this entire show because most of them are fairly long. One of them's only 4 minutes. But this would be what they consider to be the pop music side. When we come back to play the second half, I'm really going to be driving you crazy. But it's exactly the half that stimulated me when I finally played it about the sixth or the seventh time. It made me laugh out loud, and I'm like, I'm beginning to really get this. So let's see how far we can get together as we open this album up for discussion, if you will, and play the first track from the album called Tago Mago by Can, released in February of 1971. I guess I need not say that it did not chart. And yet it is considered to be one of the most influential albums of all time by so many sources. So it's worth at least a listen to see what you think of what the critics have to say, because that's why I kept going back over and over and over again, waiting for it to sink in. First track is entitled Paper House on 90.3 WHPC.
Bye.
a question for you. Were they able to perform these songs live?
Oh, they did it all the time.
With the same lyrics?
Well, you know, everything about it, they were experimenting. Sometimes, like a 7-minute song would be 29 minutes long live. Or an 18-minute song might only be 6 minutes. It was really just a matter of how...
What they were feeling.
Yeah, right. The spontaneity of that. They were very much... Holger Jukai called them spontaneous compositions. But I don't think all of them were spontaneous compositions. Some of them, like for example, that wasn't so painful at all, right?
Right.
I mean, from playing this album now often enough.
Yeah, it was rather melodious.
Yeah, I hear it. I'm like, well, that's pretty great. I mean, it goes through some really cool rhythmic changes. The drums are amazing. The rhythm section is just fantastic between Liebzeit and Jukai. Doing what they're just a great rhythm section and very jazzy, but very strong, very funky. There's a lot of funk that's going on there. I would say it's a bit of an oral masterpiece as it's recorded so well. I think if you really want to get to the genius, you need to listen to that side of it. If you heard this album with headphones, it's kind of amazing. It just like fills up your head. If you are going to focus exclusively on things like lyrics, though, or the vocal, it takes you to a very, very weird place. This is not Deep Purple. This is not the Beatles. It's not Queen. It really could not be further away from that. Any type of vocalizing that is going on here by Damo Suzuki is just strange. And it's almost like some of the song titles take their names from what it sounds like he's saying. A lot of this is being manipulated by Holger Jukai because he's the recordist. And there's times that I don't know if he's playing Damo Suzuki singing forward or backward. Or like I said, you can't really tell the language. This next song is the shortest song on the album. I guess you could call it the single. You might see what I mean about trying to derive a name from what Damo Suzuki is saying. The song is entitled Mushroom on 90.3 WHPC. So much of hair, when I saw much of hair, when I saw much of hair. pardon these, the abrupt endings happen because the original album was a double album, as I said, which is why we're going to be doing two shows dedicated to this. And the first three tracks all appeared on side one, and they were sort of put together like a suite, just there's with no silence between them. So I'm just breaking them up because
so
I
want... So you can have the opportunity to tell people about it.
A little bit, to talk about it, and because otherwise we'd be playing, you know, maybe 16 minutes of music, and then I'd be talking for another 15 minutes, and by breaking it up, I can at least spread it out a little bit. What do you think of that, though? You think, was that a little bit more normal? Did you understand any word that he said in that entire song?
Is that even a question, Tom?
I mean, I think I was able to discern what I think sounds like Mushroom Head. So I
at the very beginning.
Right. So, Mushroom Head. So it's like, okay, that's where what they probably heard. Is okay, we'll call that song Mushroom. That's that. Now, when we conceived this series in the very, very beginning, the concept was that we would dedicate this to the alternate top 40, 500 great albums that didn't make the top 40. That was where we started. So if that was the charter for what we were intending to do from the beginning, it's inevitable that we were going to be getting into some strange places. Experimental music, by definition, is going to challenge you. It's going to be a bit in your face. And it's going to be doing things that conceptually you might consider to be either ridiculous or unlistenable, and other people are going to find incredibly stimulating and challenged by it. I mean, by the course of one review, basically they say, you know that this album is arguably the most influential rock album ever recorded, that everyone that matters, and even many who don't, from Bowie to Radiohead, cite it as an influence. So it's the type of thing where, like, you know, it really did make other people who maybe have a bit more of a pop orientation decide to get a bit more experimental with their own work. And in that sense, that's why it, I think, makes it kind of wonderful, because it does break away from any sort of formulaic approach by adding a totally new palette, a new color onto the palette, I guess is what I should say, so that when other people start creating music, when you see about like what Bowie started to do in the mid-70s with albums like Low and things like that, and even with Heroes, you could tell that he was like kind of like reaching into a place that was coming out somewhere else. And this album was a big part of that. Radiohead might not even exist if it wasn't for Can.
I can hear that.
Right? No, I'm not saying that, you know, Thom Yorke sings in a foreign language and doesn't have a single word that's discernible. But what's amazing about this is that Can manages to make an incredibly interesting album, rhythmically stunning album.
Yes.
With Damo Suzuki just doing what he does on top of it. It's almost like they're saying, like, you know, we'll survive this. Watch what we can do with this with this oddity as part of our equation. So let's finish side one of the album. Again, like I said, a lot of the songs just took their titles based upon what they presumed was coming out of Damo Suzuki's mouth. And since he was making a lot of it up, an awful lot of it is non sequiturs. And one of the most common non sequiturs of all time is, oh yeah. So I guess he goes into a rant and that is part of the thing that comes up. So they simply call this song, Oh Yeah, on 90.3 WHPC.
See, I tell you what. We'll be right back.
this, you know, for all the experimental stuff, they could you could dance to that track.
I was.
Again, you know, the drums are just so solid and interesting. And like I said, the rhythms are just incredible. Now, side one of the album is probably, if to some ears, that will be like listening to Michael Jackson's Thriller, while side three, which we'll play next week, is probably like listening to a bunch of eight-year-olds banging on a wall in the basement. Making a racket. They get very, very strange. Holger Zschokai is, to me, he's like the genius of the band, but everybody in this band has got their own level of genius. I'll be the first to admit, I'm not too sure about the Damo Suzuki part. I think that what that's about is that the Germans in the band, the geniuses, the ones who are the music theorists, realized that they had something that they could utilize, bounce off of, because they didn't like to sing themselves, and they didn't want to have a conventional singer that would have been too pop. So this was their way of solving that, by having something where they would have a singer, but it was millions of miles away from what anybody else would consider to be, say, like a standard type of singer. The other thing that was happening a lot, this album took them months to record because they weren't composing in any traditional way. They would get together. They were rather lucky. There was a castle. So I don't know where it was, but there was a castle somewhere that there was like an art collector owned it. And he was obviously friends with these guys. And he said, you know, I'm not using it. If you go there, you can record there. I won't be there for months. So they set up inside of this castle, and it apparently was an amazing space for acoustics, because from what I've read, they've only used a few microphones to record this. They didn't really use too many. So they're relying on the acoustics of the room and bleed to happen through the vocal mic and things like that to get the sounds that were coming out. And it's kind of, in that regard, I think, kind of stunning what was happening. So over the course of 3 months, they eventually, what Zschokai would record, not just the band when they were playing their music, but he would record the band when they were rehearsing. He would record the band when they were sitting around talking. There is a places on the album where a dog walks into the room and starts to bark, and because they weren't playing, he figures out a way to utilize it. Around the same time as this, Miles Davis was doing something that wasn't very different. Miles Davis was recording pieces of music that were in the studio. He'd record for 90 minutes, and then he'd get his engineer to come in and figure out a way to chop it up and loop it, maybe use the same section twice and put it together. Some of Miles' best albums were made that way, Bitches Brew and In a Silent Way. Our constructions. So this is really just an extension of doing the same thing that Tio Macero is doing for Miles Davis. All right, just want to remind you, you're listening to American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHBC. Hey, Don, I've been doing this for a long time, despite the fact that we are crazy enough to play albums like Tago Mago on the air. I don't know if anybody I say this more often than I ever used to, but I think we do things that you just wouldn't hear anywhere else on the planet any longer. I don't know if anybody ever would have played this album in its entirety. I just think it seems like such a far...
I found a place on Facebook, Tago Mago Paris. It's a vegan, vegetarian restaurant, music cafe. I bet you they play it.
The album? The thing is, like, being where they are, Tago Mago is an island off the coast of Ibiza, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And that is where the name of the album was derived from. How they related that to the band, I don't know. But if you're interested in what we're doing and you want to hear something that's maybe sound, okay, this is all well and good, but, you know, have you got any, like, normal shows? Yes, we do. If you go to our website.
A lot of them.
We've got a whole bunch of them. I mean, this is about as weird as we've gotten in a while. But we're not afraid to. I mean, you know.
I ain't scared.
We'll be playing, you know, the pop stuff is right around the corner. But I think that to me, the beauty of music and the beauty of getting involved in how music changed is understanding things like this, albums like this, because it tells us an awful lot about what provided inspiration for what came after it. So I can say that up until this point, I don't think we played anything quite like Tago Mago. And despite what you think of it, this is going to have some influence on a good percentage of what comes afterward. All right. So if you go to our website, by the way, that's AmericanHitNetwork.com, or just search for American Hit Radio and you can find all of our shows. And I've got just about enough time to play the closing track. It's called Hallelujah. I think it's like that. Anyway, from side two of the album Tago Mago, we'll leave you with this long composition on 90.3 WHPC. Take care, everybody.
Recording station man, call a break, no, can't stand. Just so. la 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 la.